The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
German Chancellor Friedrich Merz has arrived in China. It's his first visit there since taking office, and he's the latest Western leader seeking to reset ties with Beijing. China's Premier Li Keqiang said in a meeting with Merz that China was looking forward to more practical cooperation with Germany.
First high-profile visitor to Beijing during this highly auspicious lunar year will be German Chancellor Friedrich Merz. Merz is expected to urge Chinese President Xi Jinping to increase pressure on its ally Russia to end the war in Ukraine. But the primary focus will be seeking closer cooperation with Beijing as a hedge against rising global trade protectionism and tariffs.
I think what Germany really needs to do is talk less about China and do more.
A lot of people have been talking about a China shock that, you know, that Germany is facing up to in the last couple of years and over the last few months even. The relationship between Germany and China has really flipped. For years, Germany was a big exporter to China, but in recent years that has completely flipped. And now, you know, China is the one exporting a lot to Germany. And there are also a lot of dependentness between the two sides. China still relies quite a lot on German imports for materials and other chemicals and manufacturing. But at the same time, Germany relies on China for those all-important rare earth materials to build its cars and other sophisticated technology. So both have, you know, hands to play when it comes to negotiations on the trade and economic issues.
Hello and welcome back to Trumpet World. This is Richard Palmer standing in for your regular host, Mr. Stephen Flurry, coming to you from our campus here in Edstone, England. And as you saw in that cold open, you had the State of the Union this week where Donald Trump said, everything is fantastic, we're fed up of winning, there are a lot of good things happening, but at the same time, there's a massive, dangerous development that is building, that is ultimately going to bring down the United States. And we saw a really important step towards that at almost literally the same time that President Trump was giving that State of the Union. And this week we saw what looks to be potentially the turning point, or at least a major turning point in German-China relations. These two countries are coming together. And we've been saying for years that these countries are going to come together and block America out from world trade. And these two countries this week were coming together. They were talking about trade. Friedrich Merz, the German chancellor, he visited China and China really rolled out the red carpet for him. And if you look at our latest Trumpet print edition, and the world is uniting against America, or the world united against America. That's our cover. And it's got, you know, Donald Trump at the front with a Friedrich Merz pretty prominent there in the background as part of these group of world leaders surreptitiously conspiring against him while, you know, Donald Trump is giving his cheers to the camera or the artist, I guess. That cover encapsulates the news this week. Donald Trump saying, we're tired of winning, everything is amazing in America, while behind his back, the world is getting together against America. Literally what we've seen over the last 2 or 3 days. So Friedrich Merz, pretty much right now, he's wrapping up this trip to China for a couple of days, where he's been meeting with Xi Jinping, he's met with the Chinese Prime Minister. Bild, the German tabloid, they noted that China hasn't welcomed a Western leader like this since 2017, or they were saying the only time China made an even bigger deal of a world leader was 2017, where they really worked to make a big deal of President Trump in his first term, and that was part of their effort to ward off Donald Trump's tariffs. Well, now they're giving Friedrich Merz, now they're giving Germany that same treatment. They welcome them with full military honors. You can see some of that in this clip here.
In recent weeks, a number of Western leaders have traveled to China. Canada's Prime Minister Mark Carney signed a strategic partnership deal during his visit last month. UK Prime Minister Keir Starmer also went to Beijing, easing years of tense relations. Together, these visits point to a wider shift. As Washington raises trade barriers, some of its allies are broadening their economic partnerships. Two decades ago, the U.S. was the main trading partner for much of the world. Today, the picture looks very different. China is now the top trading partner for more than 120 countries. Its role in global supply chain has expanded rapidly. But renewed U.S. tariffs, adding fresh uncertainty to global markets. Many European businesses are looking for stability. China is presenting itself as a steady economic partner.
And as that clip notes, the whole world is going to China. The whole world is going and sitting down with Xi Jinping and looking to build alliances to work against America. And for Germany, and especially for Friedrich Merz, this is quite a turnaround. Because there have been some ups and downs in the German-China relationship and the EU-China relationship. You know, you'll note, for example, Merz, this is towards the end of Merz's first year in office, and it's his first time meeting Xi Jinping. Now, it's for China, they're making a big deal. It's the first foreign visitor of the Chinese New Year. But yeah, it's still taken him almost a year to meet with Xi Jinping. Under Merkel, things work a lot closer. You had newspapers talking about the special relationship between Germany and China. Merkel visited China 12 times, more times than she made official visits to any other non-European country. And she even took Merkel to his hometown. I think he visited like his boyhood house. You know, these things that he hadn't done with any other world leader. So you had this special relationship, and we had a lot to say about it, between Merkel and China. And then things got a bit tenser. The relationship started to flounder on a few different issues. You had more and more Chinese companies flooding Europe with cheap, subsidized goods. I mean, a great example to look at this is electric cars. Because the EU wants everyone to buy electric cars. They're putting in mandates that you buy, I think it's 2035. They only want electric cars on sale. You won't be able to buy a petrol car. Now that they're walking some of that back, and I think they'll have to walk it even more back because it's completely unworkable. But they really want, the European government really want people buying electric cars. And this, well, for Germany and for European car companies, they have decades of experience making standard internal combustion engine cars, you know, Mercedes, Renault, VW. They don't have decades of experience making electric cars. Certainly not with the modern batteries and that kind of thing. So China, this kind of levels the playing field with China. China has these new companies and all that vast experience of the German, the French, the Italian car companies. It's not as much of an advantage. And then the Chinese government subsidized them, and they've done this in so many areas where they help the Chinese companies sell really cheaply. You know, it's a communist country. It's so easy for the communist government to single out companies and help them make things cheaply. You get special low taxes or no taxes. We'll give you free or cheap electricity or special access, special favors. We'll even give you slaves to work for you. They do that with some companies, with some of the slave labor they have in Xinjiang and those people they have in concentration camps, basically. So a lot of these Chinese companies, they're selling at a level that can't compete. And they did this in solar panels and some of these other areas where they wait for all the European companies to go out of business. And then they hike the prices up once they've got no competition. And that's what they appear to be doing in electric cars. And you see it in Britain on the road now. More and more brands that probably until, I don't know, a year, some of them I'd not heard of for the last 6 months. You know, BYD, you see those quite common. JAECOO. JAECOO. I see a lot of those now. I've never seen a JAECOO until recently. But these Chinese companies are coming in and selling these electric cars way cheaper than you get the more traditional brands, and people are buying them. I'm pretty convinced they're terrible quality. I don't have much trust in some company that's come up from nowhere, and what is their support going to look like? Are they even going to be around if you need servicing in 5-10 years? Or will will this company that's kind of come from nowhere go back to nowhere? I think that there's pretty significant disadvantages to them. But the point is, they're undercutting their EU rivals. And they're this is just one example. So you've got this has been causing a lot of animosity between Europe and China. And Europe's been trying to tell China, don't do this, and putting tariffs on China. Kind of like President Trump is. It's a similar issue in the US. And really, Europe has done less to deal with that. And then China's been responding by punishing German exports. So this has driven a wedge between them since the Merkel era. You've also got the Ukraine war, where most of Europe is backing Ukraine and China's backing Russia. And this has driven a wedge between Europe and China for quite a bit. And then you've got just them being caught up in the various different tariffs with the United States, and President Trump and even President Biden have been putting pressure on key bits of European industry. Things like the Dutch company ASML, that is the only company in the world that makes the machines that make your laptop, basically, or the brains of your laptop. Only company in the world that can make the machines that make those chips. And companies like ASML have been forced to choose a side. You want to go with, you can trade with the US or China. You can't do both. And for now, they've been choosing the United States. And that choice has been putting pressure on that European-Chinese relationship. But this week really marked a turning point where they're like, well, we want to fix this. We want to get this relationship straightened out. And so Friedrich Merz is off on this 3-day trip. And, you know, Merz said he used to be quite... this was one of the things that differentiated him from Angela Merkel, that he actually would come along and call out China. You know, in the election last year, he called China a revanchist anti-liberal axis, or that it was part of it. And one of the things I think is remarkable and signals how willing China is to start making some compromises on Europe on this issue is some of those statements he hasn't really moved away. He's continued to make some statements that traditionally would get you in trouble with China, if I put it that way. So just a week ago, he talked about, well, suddenly we see that China, unlike the last 3,000 years of Chinese history, is aggressively expanding bases in the South China Sea. He also said that they're encircling Taiwan and openly declaring that if necessary, it will be willing to use force to bring about the so-called reunification of China. So he's condemning China for being militaristic. And in previous years, China would have punished Germany for that. They might have even have cancelled the whole visit, or downgraded, or gone out of their way to try and humiliate Friedrich Merz, have him, you know, have Xi Jinping suddenly come down with a cold or a scheduling conflict and be unable to meet with him, and instead he's got to make do with some third-rate secretary to punish him for those statements. But they're not doing that. They just basically ignored them. Now, Merz, for his part, I think he's also signaling the fact that he's going, the fact that he's accepting all of this treatment, but also the way that he acted, he's signaling, well, we're willing to compromise on some issues. So every other German chancellor before Merz that has gone to China has made a point of taking questions from the press during their trip or about their trip, because this is their way of protesting softly China's media censorship and censorship in general. You know, well, China will censor and can't control what you say, or tries to control what you say. But in Germany, we're different and we're open to taking questions. Merz didn't take any questions from the press. You know, here he's making, okay, look, I'm going to stand up for Germany's trade interests. And he did talk about some of these trade grievances. I'll talk about some of the military things and the South China Sea, but I'm not going to have a go at China on human rights issues anymore. I'll shut up about that. I get the picture. You don't want that. We won't talk about that. So both sides are making compromises. Both sides are coming together. So instead, these guys have moved ahead with kind of more business relationships. So Beijing said they're going to buy 120 Airbus passenger aircraft, and they're trying, you know, we go, okay, Germany, we hear your concerns. We're buying a lot of stuff, or you're buying a lot of stuff from China, and China's not buying much stuff from you. Well, we'll buy 120 airplanes. We'll do more to buy some of those planes. And then, Merz said that later this year, more ministers would be traveling for China. He said that the economics minister would be heading over there, Katharina Reich, who, you know, she's the girlfriend of Karl Theodor zu Gutenberg. a man we're really watching closely as potentially the next strong man of Germany. So she's involved. She'll be heading over to China very soon to try and finalize more of these different details. He announced that, that you'd start to have regular German-Chinese consultations. The last time that they had these talks was 2023. They were meant to be something that they had regularly, but they stopped scheduling after that because of all of these tensions. And so that's back on the agenda now, where they're going to try and meet regularly. Mertz said that he wanted, quote, good relations not only between Germany and China, but also good relations between China and the European Union. So he said, well, we're going to, Germany, we really lead the European Union. We're going to help bring them around to dealing with China. So, some pretty big changes. Some of them were more minor. One of them made me laugh, where Germany's going to get a couple of pandas, or they'll stay in Germany for a bit longer. I always find China's panda diplomacy quite amusing. Like, they punished Japan by, now Japan has no pandas because China isn't happy with them. Trade in chicken feet. Only China. Could you have the German chancellor go over there? And one of the items on the agenda that they're talking about is Germany selling more chicken feet to China. So China will be buying more chicken feet from Germany. But you'll have a lot more trade going on. And like I said, Germany now, well, we're not as concerned about human rights in China. We're worried about the United States. And so we used to have a bit of a beef with you, China, and some of that was to do with economics, and some of that was to do with human rights concerns and the fact that your companies use slave labor. We're going to shut up about that and do business. Now, the German business world has been really leading the way on that for some time. Siemens, for example, was lobbying to be able to continue using products made by Chinese slaves in the Xinjiang products. In the Xinjiang province. And you've got American companies that do the same thing. But as Mr. Flurry wrote, has Siemens really learned its lesson? If a company's like, yeah, we want to be able to use more products from slave labor. And Siemens, you go to their website and they have a big section on there about, yep, okay, we worked with the Nazis, but we've learned our lesson. We wouldn't do anything evil like that again. We wouldn't have anything to do with slave labor from concentration camps. And they're doing the same thing in China. So when Germany's like, no, we're happy to turn a blind eye now to moral offences in China, well, that's a big red flag. That's a big warning. Now, again, to our shame, there are British companies, there are American companies that do exactly the same thing. What was it, the NBA a few years ago, where some of their players, they can take a knee for Black Lives Matter or whatever they like, and that's fine. But if they speak out about what's happening in China, well, there's too much money to be made on China, and they've got to be clamped down. They've got to be shut up at that point. So it's not just it's wrong whoever does it. But you do have to ask, has Germany really learned their lesson while they are doing this kind of, making these kind of changes? So the world is uniting really against America. Just before I move on as well, just looking back through my notes, I forgot to comment on, I think we had in the montage at the opening there, the martial arts robots that you had that they were showing off with Germany. Now, that's part of it. It's a high-tech partnership. We're working on androids and the future, future technologies. And part of me is a little skeptical because they had a soccer league, I think, over the summer, where you had Chinese robots playing football, and they were terrible. And they're looking pretty impressive with their martial arts experts. Anyway, I thought it was amusing that they brought Mertz to come and see some of that. But just another clip from the State of the Union from Donald Trump, because again, all this is happening at the same time where he's saying everything is excellent. Here's another clip from that.
Today, our border is secure. Our spirit is restored. Inflation is plummeting. Incomes are rising fast. The roaring economy is roaring like never before. And our enemies are scared. Our military and police are stacked. And America is respected again, perhaps like never before.
He's saying our enemies are running scared. Our military and police are stacked. We're respected like never before. And Germany, who America believes is a friend and an ally, and they're saying, Germany, we want you to lead Europe. We want a German general to be the head of NATO. and to command all of NATO's military forces. Germany, we really trust you more than any other country in the world to be the one that defends our interests in Europe and stands up to Russia. And then Germany is going and talking to China, and they're talking about, well, you know, how can we bring down America? And China's thinking, well, maybe we need to soften our approach to Europe and Germany and win them over to our side. And you know, the Bible talks about an economic alliance coming out of Europe. That's what you see building here. And that was, you know, we've had so much great coverage from the State of the Union, hitting all the most important points over the last day or two. But one of the things that just stood out to me in addition to all of that is Donald Trump had several of these statements where he was talking about the economy being wonderful. And you heard a bit of that even in that clip, you know, it's roaring to life like never before. And there is some good news there in America's economy. And he has done some things to turn around, to get rid of some of the really destructive things that Joe Biden was doing, cutting back regulation. There are good things happening, but there are still massive, massive weaknesses there. And one of the big, big problems is all of this is based on debt. And Germany knows this and China knows this. And they're talking about this too. America's economy is all based on debt, and they're borrowing huge amounts of money. And we talked about this in the latest Trumpet print edition as well, where, you know, sometimes we talk about America as, make the analogy of it's like a household that's maxed out their credit card and they're just paying the minimum payments on that credit card and they're still trying to borrow more money. And that could be a helpful analogy. But then it's also a little incomplete. In some ways, it's like a country with a bunch of interest-only mortgages, where it's paying interest on this debt, and then, boom, you have a lump sum that is due. You know, if it's a mortgage, you pay interest, and then at the end of the mortgage, you need to pay up $200,000 or however much the cost of the mortgage is. That suddenly becomes due. That's what America's debt is like. So they're having many of these mortgages come due every year, and they need to be paid back. So we talk about America borrowing an extra $2 trillion last year. That's how much America's debt grew by. But that's not the total amount America had to borrow. It's more like 20 or 30 trillion because you had all of this old debt that became due. And the way America pays that back is it takes out new loans. So you look at the total number of new loans and it's not 2 trillion. You know, it's over 20 trillion. And where are they getting that debt from? Some of that is coming from U.S. A lot of that is coming from U.S. institutions and U.S. individuals and Americans. But so much of that as well is coming from foreign countries. And they know this. And they're talking about this. And you know, when they're getting together and you see Germany going to China and they're talking about, well, we need to work on economic deals and trade. And okay, we'll agree to stop taking advantage of each other on trade or stop targeting each other on trade so that we can stand up to the United States. At some point, if it's not already, well, can we work together to target the dollar, to target America's debt? I mean, that's got to be a part of that conversation. I mean, really, it's being talked about. It's being referred to already. This was the Canadian Prime Minister, Mark Carney, at Davos.
Great powers have begun using economic integration as weapons. Tariffs as leverage. Financial infrastructure as coercion. Supply chains as vulnerabilities to be exploited.
Now, he's openly talking about more debt and or using debt, using economies as weapons. Hey, we don't like what America's doing. Let's talk about using our economy as a weapon. And then China and Germany are getting together to talk economics. I mean, we played this before. This was Peter Schiff, I think, talking on Fox News. But it's worth reminding in this context.
Central banks are buying gold.
They are. They are. That is true.
They're getting rid of dollars. They're getting rid of treasuries. We are headed for a economic crisis, again, that will make the 2008 financial crisis look like a Sunday school picnic. We depend on the world. They provide us with the goods that we don't produce. They loan us the money we don't save. Trump has it backwards. The world economy doesn't work because of us. Our economy works because of the world. We have a dysfunctional consumer-based credit economy that rests on the foundation of the U.S. dollar's reserve currency status, and the world is now pulling the rug out from under the U.S. The dollar is going to collapse. The dollar is going to be replaced by gold. The biggest difference between the crisis that we're about to have and the one we had back then is this one is all in America. It's not going to be exported to the rest of the world. It's not a global financial crisis. It's an American financial crisis. The rest of the world is actually going to benefit.
They're preparing. There's an American financial crisis coming as the world prepares to weaponize debt against America. I mean, it was just the State of the Union was everything is wonderful. I mean, we've got this. America has this massive, massive weakness. And America's enemies aren't cowering in fear. They're getting together and they're looking at, well, how can we exploit this weakness? When would be the best time to exploit this weakness? And so we're seeing the rise of an economic alliance that we've talked about for years. I mean, Mr. Flurry started talking about this prophesied relationship between Europe and China, between Germany and China, based on Bible prophecy in Isaiah 23 that talks about a mart of nations or a market of nations, and it includes Tyre, which anciently was the great trading center of the world, and Revelation 18 tells us that the beast power, the Holy Roman Empire, that's going to be the new great trading center coming up shortly, and they're going to be getting together with Kittim, which is an ancient name for China. That's China in Bible prophecy. Mr. Flurry's book, Isaiah's End Time Vision, spells this out in more detail. There's a chapter there on this. But he was talking about that before Angela Merkel had made her dozen visits to China, before people started talking about the German-Chinese special relationship. And then that really took off just a few years after Mr. Flurry, just a few years after God revealed that prophecy, really, to Mr. Flurry. And he's continued to make that warning. And like I said, we've seen a bit of a back off in German-Chinese relations. And now it's back on. And you're watching this prophecy fulfilled. Here's a clip from the Key of David from Mr. Gerald Flurry in 2021.
Now, if you look today, China possesses most of the world's sea gates, those powerful sea gates with all the trading that flows around the world. And there was a time when the United States and Britain had those sea gates, but they've lost most all of them to China and a few other powers. Why are we softening our view, it appears to many critics, on China today when they are becoming so aggressive and literally taking over parts of the world, even our own world, and nobody is stopping them? And because we don't stop them, and because of confrontations like Afghanistan, well, they're encouraged to do more of that. They want to control and rule the world. And it's obvious to anybody that will just listen to them and watch what they're doing that that's where this is all headed. They want to rule the world. If you look at Daniel, you have four great powers that are called beasts, ruling over all mankind for 6,000 years. And they are called beasts because they act like violent beasts of the world, animals. They are that vicious and that violent, and we need to be aware of that. If you look at Isaiah 23 and verse 13, that's the chapter that shows you really that there's a great, verse 3 says, is a mart of nations, just a super amount of traders getting together. All these Gentiles are getting together and they're going to be against Israel, the 12 nations, but specifically those three nations, America, Britain, and the Jewish nation. That is their great enemy, the way they view it. And we ought to be aware of that. Isaiah and God's prophet tells you that and shows how all of these Gentile nations are going to be besieging the nations of Israel if we don't wake up and listen to God's warning and repent of our sins, and He'll protect us if we do that. That's what your Bible tells us. Besieging America. in world trade, that is something to be very much fearful about. If you control world trade, you control the world. And that you can see happening already with China and Russia, and how Russia's going after Ukraine. And there's a Seagate there that they're very much interested in. And there looks like they're going to do even more because nobody is stopping them.
That was several clips, really, from that Key of David, showing all the ways that China and Germany, all these different prophecies about these beast powers that are coming together, and they're going to work on bringing down the United States. And that is exactly what you saw this week, even during the State of the Union address. Coming together, Germany, China, just like we said on the latest Trumpet print, tomorrow's news today, they're coming together to bring down the United States. Well, we'll take a quick break, and we'll take another look in the second half, or a different look at a different way Germany is uniting the world and uniting Europe against America. We'll be right back. Massive German rearmament triggers warnings in several European countries. Is Germany becoming a military superpower that will openly dominate the continent? Welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Show. That's the introduction from a German foreign policy article last week. Germany is rearming, as we have talked about a fair bit on this show, but in the process, it is really establishing its dominance over Europe. And Germany is uniting the world against America. That's the cover article we were talking about from the latest Trumpet print in the first half of the show. But really, in becoming this military superpower, Germany is establishing its dominance over all of Europe. It's really taking on a new level of leadership and dominance in Europe. And several articles from France last week really accentuate that. The French are getting really, really worried about this. I mean, you go back to the 2008 financial, like, Germany dominates Europe. Okay, we've been writing that headline for a few decades now. That's not really new. It's been true for quite some time. You go back to the 2008 financial crisis. Germany was Europe's largest economic power, its biggest population. 2008, in the aftermath there, it wasn't Germany's leading military power. But just with the fact that it dominated the economy, that it wasn't borrowing a lot of money, the government had spare cash while no one else did, and that largest population as well, it meant that it could dominate Europe and boss Europe around, and countries would have a bailout, and they'd basically be put under German governorship. You'd have a German governor come there and tell them how to run their country. And at the time, we rightly highlighted a lot of these headlines that were talking about Europe as a Fourth Reich and the way that Germany dominated. And I think Germany over the years since then has gotten a bit more savvy about how it throws around its power and about doing it in a way that doesn't generate quite as many of those headlines. But they dominate. Now, though, that domination is going to a new level. That control is becoming even stronger as it adds being Europe's dominant military power to all of the other advantages that it had. And this is, like I said, starting to become a really hot topic in France. They're realizing that they're not a part of a Franco-German partnership anymore. And instead, they're being absorbed into a German-dominated, German-led Europe. Going back to this German foreign policy piece, it says EU diplomats are already diagnosing a tectonic shift on the continent. In Europe, in France, the first public warnings about a German Europe are being voiced. And they're right, and they talk about how by 2030, Germany aims to be spending $150 billion on its military, and it's on course to be spending that much. Meanwhile, France is aiming to spend $67 billion on its military. It used to be, for years, France was the EU's biggest military power, and they were slightly outspending Germany. I don't know, 10-20%, depends on the year. But now we're looking at not a reversal of that, where Germany spends a little bit more than France. We're looking at Germany spending more than double what France spends. This is a huge shift for Europe. German foreign policy says this spells the end of France's previous practice of compensating for Germany's economic superiority by having an advantage in terms of military potential and armaments. So no longer, it used to be Germany, France could still feel valued. And okay, maybe they did acknowledge, well, we're number two in the partnership, but it's still a Franco-German partnership. You know, we lead together. Germany provides the economic might. We provide the military might. And okay, we're falling behind in influence to Germany, but, well, they need us still. And, you know, they're falling way behind that. And they see it. So Le Figaro, they wrote last week, Germany is rearming in German mode. That is to say, massively. Some 500 billion euros budgeted over 12 years, already 190 billion orders since 2023. Most of these sums are reserved for national industry, in particular the Rheinmetall behemoth. And they were talking about, what does this mean for us? And then the Journal du Dimanche had an article even more direct on this. And that journal, I think, is more affiliated with or leans towards the kind of the far right scene in France, or the National Front and some of their supporters. But I think it's still a really interesting article to look at the worries that a lot of people in French have. It was called a German Europe, and it states, and this is Google Translate. Some of it Google Translate threw up a few funny things, but it says, since Maastricht, everything has changed. Germany has taken control of the key institutions of the Union. She is the one of the couples who wears the panties, it says. I imagine that's meant to be the pants, Google Translate. But it says, on every subject, it is Berlin that makes Paris bend. And it goes through and looks at all of these different areas and says, yeah, it's Germany calling the shots now. On energy, Germany will have done everything to destroy the comparative advantage of French nuclear power. As for the European electricity market, it was designed to favor the German system, which represents in which gas represents 30% of the energy mix. On the question of trade and free trade, it goes on to say, well, it's Germany that gets its way. The guidelines of all the free trade agreements negotiated by the European Commission with the rest of the world is very simple to understand and summarize. It is a question of opening the markets to sell German cars while sacrificing in return French agriculture. You know, Germany wanted Mercosur, this Latin American trade deal. And Europe is, and places like France, they are fighting quite the rearguard action to stop that from happening. But Germany's largely got their way there. It goes on to say, and then, of course, there's the euro, that taboo of French political debate. We are on sacred territory. All criticism is sacrilege. And yet, what is this common currency? Nothing other than a European mark designed to strengthen Germany and weaken France. That's how he sees this, as basically a version of a Deutschmark. But he points out very compellingly, Germany's doing very well with the euro and France isn't. Today, France has a trade deficit of 100 billion euros per year and Germany a surplus of 200 billion. Furthermore, several studies have shown that the euro gives Germany an increase in competitiveness of between 10 and 20%, while France suffers a penalty of close to 25%. It all favors Germany. He talks about a conversation, the author does, of one of the people that helped draft the Treaty of Rome, this treaty that they signed in 1957, or went into force, I think, in 1957, that took the European coal and steel community and made it the European Economic Community, you know, made it basically the European Union. And this individual said, we did all this to swaddle Germany. And then the author says, we don't swaddle anything anymore. You know, we tried to contain Germany within Europe. And it's just like what Margaret Thatcher said about you've not tied Germany to Europe, you've tied Europe to a increased and unstable Germany. It says Germany is rearming. The explosion of the German military budget promises to drag its defense industry into a dynamic that France will not be able to follow. Well, the German defense, Germany's spending all this money, and they're spending them in all of these German defense companies. And just like it used to be, France had the biggest budget. Well, the French defense companies, I guess Leclerc and Dassault Aviation and things like that, well, they used to be some of the biggest in Europe, exporting around the world. And already the German, you know, people like Rheinmetall and KNDS, ThyssenKrupp Marine Systems, you know, they're already really giving these French companies a run for their money. But if you've got a Germany that's spending more than double what France is spending, well, those defense companies are really going to take off. And it's not going to be partnerships with French defense companies anymore. It will be the German ones that dominate. It concludes, in short, we gave up everything to the Germans. This is the first time since the Schuman Declaration that Europe has thought of itself, projected itself outside of France. The idea of a Europe which would be a lever of Archimedes, the idea of a French Europe, is dead. We made a German Europe. Nice work. You know, he said, we thought Europe would be a device for German, French power to accentuate French power or to amplify French power. And it's not. It's amplified German power. They dominate us. Just two articles from both published last week in the French media. And, you know, when France was dominating a lot of other countries, you know, they kind of left. You know, France won that number two spot. They weren't as affected. And now they're realizing, yeah, we live in Germany's world. And in the background, the impetus for a lot of this is Germany is bossing France around. The German foreign minister, a bit over a week ago, you know, he complained about the French not spending more on their defense. He says, unfortunately, efforts in the French Republic about their military has so far been insufficient. And so he says that Paris is called upon to make one or two cuts in the social sector, and also to make savings in other areas so as to create the latitude needed for the core goals of European defense capability. There's still room for improvement. So you've got a German defense minister telling the French where they should be spending their money. You know, you're spending too much on social programs and pensions, France. And Germany feels like they can make these comments now. And of course, the French really don't like being told where they can spend their money. And they don't like being told by anyone, cut your social spending and spend less on your pensions. But let alone coming from the German foreign minister. And it does kind of sound like somebody talking to their province. Well, this is how you have to spend. So I think that's a lesser talked about aspect of Germany becoming this military superpower, is it is really establishing their dominance in a unique way over all of Europe. Market Watch had a really interesting article this week as well that ties into some of the bond market and the American debt that we talked about in the first half, on another unintended side effect, or maybe intended but less discussed side effect of Germany's mass military spending. And their opinion piece was titled, Europe's military buildup could create a bond market powerhouse that threatens US treasuries. And so it talks about, well, if Europe's going to be spending more on their military, they're going to be borrowing a whole lot more money. And so if you've got investors and they're looking at, well, do I borrow to lend my money to the United States, whose debt is about 120% the size of their economy? Or do I borrow to lend money to Germany, whose debt is 60% the size of their economy? Germany looks a bit more compelling. And so as you have Europe borrowing more and more money, it's going to make it hard. You've got more and more, it's going to make harder for America to compete for that same lending from investors. It will have impacts on America. And it talks about how, well, ultimately, you'll have to have some kind of joint defense borrowing to fund Europe's defense. You know, if Germany is serious about France spending more on its military, it probably will need to share the German credit card a bit. The Germans are dead against that. But if and when that happens, and you can start buying euro bonds as a stable asset, that's really going to hurt US treasuries. So this article says the fiscal consequences are enormous. Combining new defense-related issuance with existing joint borrowing programs, Europe is on track to establish a eurobond market to exceed 1 trillion euros. This includes approximately 650 billion from the coronavirus era, 95 billion for Ukraine, several hundred billion euros for new defense facilities, and national borrowing enabled by fiscal exemptions. This represents a debt shock second only to the pandemic. So lots of other options. It says joint issuance is no longer a political aspiration. It's a market necessity. Europe is being pushed by geopolitics rather than ideology towards the equivalent of a federal debt market. And this is one of those boring but huge things. And when we have Philip Nice on Trumpet World to talk about the Trumpet print, I feel like we often get into these things that we don't tend to think about very much, but are at the bedrock of how the world works. And joint debt issuance... Why did the 13 colonies of the United States become one country, the United States, and not 13 separate countries? There's a lot that would go into that, but there's a lot of historians that would point to joint debt issuance as being the key, certainly a key, but maybe even the key moment that decides, well, they're going to be one country, the United States, and will kind of function as a single government rather than something more like the European Union or the African Union or something where you have a supranational national body, but the government still rests with the individual nation states. You know, that if you're issuing joint bonds, joint debt, you're coming together and issuing debt together, you really, your future is tied together. Your economies are tied together. That is the Rubicon, the point of no return. And like it says, Europe is being pushed into that. If you're wanting to build up a military in a serious way, and Germany can do it by themselves, but then they want to amplify that. They're saying, well, yeah, we're spending a ton on our military, but France, we want you to, and Netherlands, Italy, all of you, we want you to do it. Well, sooner or later, they're going to be forced to have more. They're already doing some joint bonds, a couple of hundred billion euros of them, but they're going to, for defense, they're going to have to do more. And, that's where this defense spending is forcing. This defense spending is forcing Europe together. This article continues, this has not only market structure consequences within Europe, but also cross-border implications. A deep liquid Eurobond market could compete directly with US treasuries for global capital. If institutional investors were to perceive such a market as a viable alternative at scale. And then it talks about how that's a really bad timing for the US because they're trying to borrow more and more money. And this is going to create competition for the US. Another interesting article on this subject. This is just a quote. George Friedman at Geopolitical Futures. He does a question and answers every week. And somebody asked him about European unification. I didn't write down the exact question, but I thought his article was interesting. And I think he was basically asked, look, do you think Europe's going to come together in a kind of super state, or do you think they're going to fall apart? And he says, for the Europeans, basically, a super state would be the best solution. For the Americans, a united Europe could pose a threat more dangerous than the Soviets were or the Chinese are. That's exactly what Mr. Armstrong said. A united Germany or a united Europe is going to be more powerful than the Soviet Union or the United States. And he's saying, well, it's going to be more powerful than the Soviets or the Chinese. He says, the problem for the Europeans is that the unification of Europe was tried by some empires and nations in the past and always failed in the end. Europe is a place of many relatively small nations with different languages, cultures, and histories. And the histories of those varying and small nations are filled with bitter memories, mutual distrust, and to some extent, contempt. No conqueror organizations from the Catholic Church to the European Union has been able to bring these nations together. I think it's interesting. He lists the Catholic Church as a conqueror organization. And he is right that none of these organizations have been able to bring Europe together permanently. But that some of these organizations did bring Europe together for a pretty long time. Others brought them together pretty powerfully for quite a short time. So from the American point of view, the cost of involvement in Europe is potentially high, while the likelihood of European unification is pretty low, he says. If the entire European continent would unify under one government, that would be a challenge to the world. I mean, great that he sees this. There's a lot of people that don't. But he says, you know, if you get a real European superstate, the way that the Trump administration kind of wants, well, it's going to challenge the world. But even during the great European age of conquest, the Europeans spent much of their time fighting each other and finally losing their enemies. So I'd say the risk of a united Europe is pretty low. So I think a sadly complacent ending. But he sees the potential power in a united Europe. And I mean, we know from Bible prophecy, like, yeah, he's right to be skeptical. Like, it is ultimately going to fall apart. The Bible talks about this European Union as a union of iron and clay. It doesn't mix well. And it left to its own devices, it would fall apart. But something that comes together powerfully for a few years in an age of nuclear weapons is terrifying. I mean, that could still wipe out the world. Plunge the world into nuclear war, even if it is ultimately doomed to fail and fall apart. And there's more critical news stories pointing to it coming together. You know, we talked about Germany dominating. There's also a push more and more to have a small group of nations dominating. It's talked about in several different terms, the E6, a supergroup, a European Security Council. You know, there's a lot of different names for a leaner, meaner, shrunk down EU that are being thrown about right now. There've been talks about this for a long time. This idea that, well, 27 nations is too unwieldy. Yeah, Germany dominates, but it still takes a long time to get things done. And we need a leaner, meaner group where we can move really quickly. And so when they passed the Lisbon Treaty, that was what, like 2007, 2008, or the European Constitution before that, that talks about PESCO, permanent European structured cooperation where you'd have a smaller group of nations coming together. I think it was around 2011, 2012, 2013. You had the Berlin 10, the Berlin group, this group of 10 European nations that said, we want to shrink down and move together more forcefully. And that didn't ultimately go too far. But I mean, the numbers of countries raised were about 6 to 12, but there are several efforts underway right now to have a core Europe that pushes more quickly. And there's a lot more will now. This is an idea. It kind of went dormant after the Berlin 10. It would get talked about from time to time. But now there's much more movement on this idea of we need to shrink down and we need to get a core Europe. And some of those countries, especially the smaller countries, they're starting to realize, just as France is kind of waking up to, well, we're part of a German-dominated Europe, often these smaller countries are starting to wake up and realize, well, we don't really have a voice at all. It's this core, small group. They dominate all of us. And we're just being left on the sidelines. So Politico had an article this week where they said US President Donald Trump's threats to annex Greenland were the epiphany moment for Europe's six largest economies to club together and speed up financial market reform, Spanish economy minister Carlos Cupiero told Politico. So this is about this new group called the E6, France, Germany, Italy, the Netherlands, Spain, and Poland. Yeah, I think it's interesting that there you've got five Western European nations and one Eastern European nation. And they'll come together and get things done more quickly. It says that they're designed to break political deadlocks that have hamstrung efforts to create a US-style financial market over the last decade. Now, as they're responding to Donald Trump's tariffs, it's like, well, we need to make it easier for money to flow between EU countries and make it easier for someone in Belgium to invest in a German country and somebody in Germany to invest in a Portuguese company. We need to unlock this so we have a financial market that is more like the United States is, where they've got one big stock exchange in New York and investing is easier and you've got big pension funds that cover millions of people from across the United States. Well, can we have a big pension fund based in Frankfurt that covers and that people can invest in easily from all across Europe? And how do we sort out the tax and all those different ramifications? So they're looking at getting rid of that deadlock. And so they've gotten this E6 together. They're starting to meet ahead of G7 meetings and talk about, well, how do we respond as a European major powers? And the other powers in Europe are starting to feel left out. Like they get a vote on when the 27 EU nations sit around and talk about things and they have a seat at the table. But more and more, it's just these E6 saying, well, we're the big economies. We count. We don't really care what you think as much. So a fascinating and important development there as you get a German Europe, a Europe that's talking to China, a pared down EU. I think it's interesting that Poland is getting involved in this. Generally, a lot of these efforts to shrink down a European Union, they have been a group of Western European nations. And so, you know, Herbert W. Armstrong talked for years about how you would have 10 nations, because Revelation 17 talks about 10 kings giving their power to the beast. And Daniel chapter 2 has this Daniel 2 image that shows the Gentile empires that would dominate the world from then on out. And it finishes with 10 toes, 10 nations that form this resurrected Roman Empire. And these 10 toes, it's an iron and clay union. It's not a strong union. And so Herbert W. Armstrong talked about that a lot. And you see this from Mr. Armstrong, where you'd have, at one point, you had 10 nations in the European Economic Community. And Mr. Armstrong said, well, you've got 10 nations. Yeah, now that I think it was after Greece joined, they're not the same 10. Mr. Armstrong or Mr. Flurry has had similar statements. We had a Trumpet article when we had the Berlin 10 saying, yeah, this is really significant that you've got a smaller group of countries trying to move forward more quickly. But these 10 are not the final 10. And we can know that because the final 10 is going to be like that Daniel 2 image. It will have 5 from the east and 5 from the west. And like I said, I think it's interesting. We've started to get Poland, an Eastern European nation now. And so I'm not saying that all 5 of those Western European nations in the E6 are going to be in the final ones. We don't know. They could well be. But it's going to be 5 in the East, 5 in the West. So we're watching for that coming nation. And then just one other article I wanted to touch on very quickly, where several European bishops, was the president of the French, German, Italian and Polish bishops conference, they put out an open letter basically saying, they said exacerbated nationalism is a form of idolatry, and that Christians are called to share their hope of fraternity with all inhabitants of the European continent. And it was basically these bishops getting together saying, hey, we need to get back to supporting a united Europe. You know, a federal Europe, a European superstate, that was always a Catholic project right from the start. And many of the EU's founding fathers, they are on the path to being made saints by the Catholic Church. So, you know, we are watching what Herbert W. Armstrong talked about for years. We're watching it happen before our eyes. You know, here's that quote we play quite a bit about Germany being the heart of Europe.
And some of us, my friends, know not only what we see when we're over there, but we know also what is prophesied. And we know what is prophesied to rise up in Europe. And we know which is the one and the only nation in Europe that is capable of dominating, and which is the economic and the industrial heart of all Europe, without which there could be no stability and strength. A human body cannot live without its heart. And the economic and the military body that is to rise up and to restore the Roman Empire, the thing that we least suspect here in the United States, it cannot rise up without its heart. And its heart is in Germany.
Now we see Germany dominating Europe and France saying, well, yeah, Germany's leading us. You know, and Germany's going to China and they're building these trade alliances. They're talking about shrinking down the Ten Kings. You're going to need the Catholic Church to bring these countries together, even temporarily, to bring that iron and clay union together. And they're talking about, well, we need to do more to support Europe. And the Holy Roman Empire is almost here. So you, the same week that Donald Trump is giving his State of the Union, you see the power that Herbert W. Armstrong prophesied for decades would bring down the United States. And you see that coming together. You see how quickly it could form. I mean, that's a critical part of the State of the Union. America's nemesis is rising right now. And everything Mr. Armstrong talked about for decades is happening so fast. And you can read more about what he said. We have our free book, The Holy Roman Empire in Prophecy. We'll give you a lot more about this empire rising in Europe and let you turn to the scriptures and prove for yourself what the Bible says about that empire. Well, thank you so much for joining me today. That is about all we have time for. I believe Mr. Stephen Flory will be back tomorrow, but you can please do get in touch if you have any questions, any comments, letters@thetrumpet.com. Thank you so much for joining us, and please do tune in same time, same place tomorrow.